24/7, a wake-up call for our non-stop world.
Right, more than a million, 10,000, tens of thousands for one more. Much more, a lot more, an order of magnitude more. It's more than 200 million, billion. The growth, more access to more. I'm so much more, half a billion more, probably a lot more, would grow more and more, sharing more and more, sharing more and more.
This is the 24/7 podcast, a wake-up call for our non-stop world. I'm Sarah Cook, and I'm the curator of 24/7, an exhibition at Somerset House. Over the series, we ask you to sit back, relax, to think about the world around you, and contemplate the non-stop nature of modern life.
10 likes is great, but 20 is better. 200 followers is good, but 300 would be better. This cycle never ends. We always want it to be larger. More is not a goal. More is a state of being.
Have we lost control of our time, the natural rhythm of our lives? Have we forgotten how to pay attention to the world around us, or to daydream? The non-stop world we live in has been driven by changes in technologies, including artificial light and clocks. And we often think of our non-stop world as driven by more disruptive digital technologies, but actually just the slicing of time into 24 time zones or the possibility of working both day and night are key aspects of our 24/7 culture. Artists are good bellwethers for better understanding our current technological conditions. So over the course of this podcast series, you'll be able to reflect on how 24/7 culture manifests itself in your life and through understanding the ways in which artists approach some of the challenges wrought by 24/7 culture, you might rethink your own relationship to time.
If we go back 20 years, and I had just asked anyone on the street, could you tell me how many friends you have? Or do you know how many friends your friend has? Or do you know if your thing is liked more than their thing is liked? We didn't used to carry around a count of how many followers we have or how many friends we have in our head. My name is Ben Grosser, and I'm an artist who focuses on the cultural, social, and political effects of software, paying attention to how the way a piece of software is designed ends up having particular kinds of effects on those who use them. In fact, I would say that just as much as we as humans engineer software, software in turn engineers us back. It determines how we relate to the world, in all the different ways that software weaves through our daily experience. Order of magnitude, which is the work that I have in 24/7, is what I kind of think of as an epic supercut drawn from all of Mark Zuckerberg's video recorded appearances from 2004 to 2018. So in terms of his own life, it's from ages 19 to 34, at the founding of the company to just last year.
More effectively, for 250 million more effectively. And that's three times more effective, more effective. Efficient, more value, more efficient, more value, more efficiently, when more information is more connected, more active, and more share, more sharing, more getting more and more growing, and becoming more useful at an increasing rate.
So back in around 2011, I started to have my own, started to realize that I was, as I used Facebook, I was obsessed with my own metrics. I realized that when I would log on, I would first look at that red and white notification number. That's exactly where my eyes would go. And when I would see a number there, I'd have just this tiny little blip of excitement, you know, with anticipation of what might be behind that number. Did someone friend me? Is there a new post, etc.? And if I logged on and there wasn't a red and white number, I'd have a tiny little bit of deflation. You know, oh, nobody paid attention to me while I was gone. And of course, you click on that number, and the first thing that happens is the number goes away. And so, you know, you see whatever it was, but the only way to really get that number back is to put some more content into the system. Maybe somebody responds to it, gives you a like or a friend, and then it produces another number, and that cycle continues. And so I started to notice this interaction pattern. At the same time, I realized that the way I was scanning my own feed was looking at the numbers, in particular focusing on how many likes I would get, or how many people were commenting, or how much my post was shared, more than who liked it, or what they were saying, or who was commenting on it, and these kinds of things. And that really made me wonder why. Why do I care about these numbers so much? What is going on here? And so I started to think about our relationship to numbers and metrics and analytics and all these kinds of things that are really active in culture now. But as an artist, the way that I address these kinds of questions first is to build something. And so I built a piece of software that I call Facebook Demetricator, and it's a browser extension that hides all numbers throughout the Facebook interface. And the idea is it would allow me to just use Facebook and have an experience of the system without those numbers as a way of trying to understand what they were doing. But more importantly, it's a piece of software I put out into the world so that anybody can use it and try it out for themselves and see what that experience is. And the numbers have dramatic effects on how we act and interact within these systems.
You know, a billion isn't like a magical number. 5 billion. Billions, 699 million. More than 40% of more competition. More. It's around 20%. We're growing more, engaging more, sharing more. What's more likely is that almost a billion grow and more than 100,000 ungrow. You know, I mean, growing really quickly, more human, growing more stuff at more than one to get more. There are thousands at 100%. People want more valuable. We've been pushing just to get more 1,000 or 100 million, 9,000, 1,000 or 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 or 8,000, 1,000, right? It's 9,000 or 10 million or 100 million or more. It's actually growing really slowly.
Order of magnitude is really a different way that I've tried to, you know, after a lot of that work focused on Facebook in that way, I've gone back to try to get a better understanding of what Mark Zuckerberg thinks about. What has he been thinking about all along the way? What, you know, what has been his focus? I went and I watched and acquired every video recorded appearance that he's had throughout the last 15 years from all the different sources, you know, somebody's cell phone video at a conference or a Q&A he did at the Facebook headquarters or these kinds of things. And I've gone through and I have marked and extracted every time he spoke one of three categories of words. The first is the word
more.
The second is the word grow or growth or some variation of that.
So we've definitely grown.
And the third is anytime he speaks a metric.
Billion. About a billion, 4 billion, 4 billion, 1,000 or 10,000 times.
And to be quite honest, when I had this idea, I thought, oh, this won't take too long. I'll just go through all these videos. I'll find it. Maybe it'll add up to, you know, a few minutes of time. It would still be a long supercut at 5 minutes, but it'd be interesting to see like how much of this is there. And the work turned out to be 47 minutes long. It's so much bigger than I ever expected.
More has grown to grow and grow. It's growing more data. I think do more to grow more accelerate the growth.
The scale of just even trying to capture Zuckerberg's utterances of metrics and more and growth is so big. It really becomes a chronicle of Silicon Valley's overall obsession with growth over this last 15 years. And it, you know, that obsession underlies everything that we do with our phones and our computers now. The software is built in ways that encourage accumulation, focus on the numbers, growth, etc.
100 more, and you grow more than 100, grow more than everyone else, more than half, more, growing growth team. Growing.
In 2016, fast forward, the election happens, all of the discussions around the negative effects of social media have amplified, and the media has really attuned to this in the last 2 to 3 years. And now in 2019, it's a strange state of affairs for me, but the social media companies themselves have started to experiment with hiding metrics, at least under certain conditions. And they're just tests. They haven't committed. Nobody's committed to it. But they have, you know, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook have all announced that they are engaged in some kind of test to hide, say, just the like count or something like that. on a social media platform. The ideology of growth, the obsession with constant accumulation, the focus on metrics that is the foundation of Facebook and our experience through social media is an important thing to think about because it reconfigures our experience to communication, to friends, to information. What is the responsibility of social media corporations or technology corporations to be managing the flow of information from one person or one organization to another? And, you know, Facebook's original way of talking about this was to argue themselves as a neutral party. You know, that all Facebook was for was to facilitate communication and connection. I think we've learned since 2016 that definitely these platforms are not neutral. I mean, there were a lot of people, artists, scholars, etc., arguing that these platforms were not neutral well before 2016. Facebook has not seemed to pay much attention to these kinds of people. They do have a responsibility, and a social media platform is a algorithmically designed space to organize and make decisions for individuals about what they will see and what they won't see. And, you know, this is what the news feed does. The news feed does this on Facebook. The algorithmic feed does this on Twitter and other platforms. It's the corporations who are making decisions about what is important for us and what isn't important for us. And I would say that because they are so focused on metrics as an organizing frame for how they decide what information is important, what information is engaging, that this produces an environment where polarizing speech has preference. Things that get reaction have preference. And so what we have are not only platforms that decide what we get to see, they also compel people to produce certain kinds of speech and to not produce other kinds of speech. They compel us to produce polarizing speech, and they discourage us from producing nuanced, long, complicated arguments. That's not what they're built for. I mean, Twitter literally isn't built for that, and Facebook doesn't preference it. If you do more than a certain number of words, it just hides it behind a click. The role of social media in our current, you know, moment is much bigger than the desires and needs of an individual company. That a company that is driven from a profit motive like Facebook or Twitter has a duty to their shareholders to just keep getting bigger and having more activity, and that's what produces more ads and thus more profit. But this has become how we communicate. I mean, you know, sometimes we hear suggestions to, well, you should just get off social media. That's the answer to this. But of course, that doesn't really pay attention to the reality of what happens if you get off social media. Now you become disconnected from your family. You may not be able to participate in your job. You know, this is the de facto way that we all keep track of each other now. So, you know, from my perspective, the CEOs, the companies are doing way too little. They're not experimenting enough with how they can make changes to accommodate some of these problems. They're not paying attention to people who've studied these problems for years and given them all kinds of roadmaps to make fixes. And it seems to me they maybe haven't earned the trust of not just the United States, but the world to have the responsibility that they do and the role that they do in society.
We may find more, but we can do more. We will more than double. We'll add more than 250, share more and more, more services to help more thousands of some of the more 100 times or 1,000 times bigger than billions and billions of, with tens of millions, as many as 2 million growing and improving quickly. And we'll keep you updated with more soon.
We have become attuned by the design of social media platforms to continuously pay attention to how we're being perceived through metrics. And this is a new thing for us as a species. Evolutionarily, we have a developed need for esteem. We evolved to with a need to feel valued, whether by ourselves or others. But now that we live in the context of capitalism, value is quantifiable. It's a measurable thing. And social media platforms took that a whole step further, where they report back to us continuously these values that are reflecting on our sociality. And so it becomes very difficult for us to look away from these numbers. We're always wondering how we're being perceived. And we always want these numbers to be larger. We want growth. We want more, because the systems are designed this way. And so the result of this, of course, is that we're looking at our phones in bed. We're looking at our phones in the bathroom. We're looking at our, like, whatever. We're paying attention to these numbers at any moment we can. And the rhythms of the day that might have existed before social media platforms are now reconfigured to really just be, are we looking at our phone or not looking at our phone? Are we paying attention to how we're being perceived or are we not? And so while we may be able to step away at certain points, or we may have to step away at certain points, we can't help but always wonder, how is it going? Who's paid attention? What's the latest like count? And that really changes the rhythm of life.
Jonathan Reakey here, director of Somerset House and co-curator of 24/7. What struck me was Crary's ability to provide a perspective on a complex subject and set of interrelationships, and his ability to see the macro issue and not hone in on just a particular part of the issue of our 24/7 hyperactive world. 7 years on, in an afterword he's written for the catalogue of the exhibition, he's reflected once more on what he called the wreckage of the day. He says, "We live amidst the non-stop hyperactivity of production, consumption, extraction, transport and circulation, occurring on a global scale, all fueled by processes of accumulation, of possessiveness, by artificially contrived appetites that are intrinsically unappeasable. The speed and ubiquity of digital networks amplifies, for billions of people, the incontestable priority of getting, having, owning, coveting, envying, all of which inflames the restlessness of the world, operating without pause, without the possibility of rest or recovery, a world choking on its heat and waste." Thanks for listening to the 24/7 podcast. The exhibition continues at Somerset House until the 23rd of February 2020, and it takes visitors on a multi-sensory journey from the cold light of the moon to the fading warmth of sunset, through 5 theme zones and containing over 50 multidisciplinary, interactive and sensory works that will provoke and entertain.
We'll be right back.